I was trained in the art of silence by a magician named Fear. He's good. He even looks like me in the mirror, so he slipped into my mind and I studied him well. I could float in a room and no one could tell. He taught me to squeeze the life out my lungs, how to swallow my words, how to bite my own tongue. It's just a trick, a sleight of the hands over your lips. Silence is a strange thing. It's hard to describe, but you can feel it inside. It rests in the darkness, but I was born on the edge of the horizon. All suns were built to rise. I was made to break this dawn and bleed ink on the sky. So I picked up a pen, gripped it tight in my fists, and I wrote my first poem on the ink of a solar eclipse. I found a bottle of light tucked deep from within. So I opened it up and exhaled life into the wind. My voice is a rose stem. Cut from the thicket, I'll float petals to your heart, but I'll plant thorns in your throat. My words are beautiful, but hard to swallow and hold. You see, I was trained in silence by the illusion of fear. I told y'all he was good. He even looked like me in the mirror, but I broke the spell. The answer is clear. I breathe words in the air. They're written in my lungs. Poetry is a part of me, and that's why I'm here.
So that's why you are here. Why you are here in Switzerland, William?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm here because I was fortunate to be invited to teach a masterclass and a poetry workshop with COF, the Swiss Peace Building Platform at Swiss Peace, which I did yesterday and had a wonderful time.
So exactly, we are happy to have you here in the studio in Radio Rabe. William, tell me a spoken word poetry. I believe personally that words can give you the life and also can kill you. So it's like a weapon. So we have to know how to use it. Mm-hmm. And how do you use your words in poetry to transfer it for people?
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I think poetry, art in general, it's not good or bad, it's powerful. And it's about how do we wield that power. And for me, poetry, creative storytelling, is something that's very foundational to what it means to be human. It is something that we live storied lives, and our conflicts are storied, and our paths to peace are also storied. And so poetry, for me, has always been a path to explore how to better understand violence and conflict, how to raise awareness about it, and then also on the alternative, to how do we construct the alternative? How do we tell the stories that inspire our actions, that move us forward as individuals and as collectives? And I've been very fortunate in my life to do that work personally within, and to do that work as an educator, as a poet, as a journalist, working around peace and conflict issues in my home country of the United States and in various countries around the world.
Around the world now, there are a lot of conflicts, as you said. How can you help the young men? Because you are working with the young men. How can you help them with these spoken words?
Yeah, so there's a couple ways. And I think my background started out and broadly arts and peace education, and was working with young people across the board. But by doing that, I realized that I was disproportionately working with young men who were in my home country caught up in the criminal justice system, who were at risk of dropping out of school, who were getting suspended from school. And so part of that process helped me realize that perhaps young men disproportionately commit violence, and perhaps some peace education should disproportionately pay attention to why that is and what we can do about it. And what I've found to be really effective is to use arts-based practices in combination with other traditional peace and violence prevention work to support young men in bringing some complexity to what it means to be a man. In certain societies around the world, we often define being a man as aggressive and as dominant and as the use of force. And there are a lot of situations where that doesn't work out, where that doesn't produce the outcomes that we as a collective want. And so how can we use poetry with young men to help illuminate that? Again, so using creative writing, using emotional exploratory writing, using metaphor as creative critical tools to help young men understand conflict, and then at the same time, as you pointed out, to use those same tools to help them construct the alternative narratives that they want to live. And so it's about saying, let's shine a light on the problems that we see. Let's understand our role within it. So using personal narrative writing as a tool to understand how we are connected. We're not separate from this violence. We are a part of this violence. And then lastly, how can we envision something different? The scholar Bell Hooks talks about if we want to help men change, we need blueprints for change. What are our blueprints towards a better, more peaceful world? And I think that starts at the individual level, and it moves up to the societal, to the cultural, to the structural. But it starts with the individuals, and how can we help them? And what I found is that a lot of young men that I work with, they want that. They want alternatives, and they're looking for spaces where they can cultivate those ideas, where they can work with other young men and young women to build those different futures. And I think poetry can be a really culturally responsive, a really inspiring way to do that work. It's certainly not the solution for everyone. Some people just don't like poetry. There's nothing wrong with that. But what I found is a lot of people do. And when you expand the definition of poetry, for example, I hated poetry for the first 18 years of my life. I did
not. Now you are a poet.
Exactly, yeah. I did not just like, oh, I'm not interested in poetry. No, I hated poetry. I didn't like it. The way that it was taught to me in school did not appeal to me. It seemed just like boring. And it seemed about subject matter that didn't relate to me. And so it was hard for me to connect with that, particularly as someone who at parts of my life struggled in school. And so it wasn't until I found spoken word poetry, which really radically expanded the definition of what poetry could be. And now thinking about poetry as simply as creative storytelling that can adapt to different cultures, to different styles, to different emotions, that is where it feels like it taps into the ancient roots of poetry. You know, long before the word was ever written down, it was spoken aloud. And so what we're doing with spoken word is tapping into that history. And I think when we frame poetry that way, all young people of all genders can better relate and find their path within it. And what I found is that's particularly effective when working with young men.
As you said, as you was taught the poetry, you hated. So is there any in your projects or on your workshop, the women also involved or participate, and children also? Because as a child, you said that you hated poetry. So there are a lot of children in schools, they hated many literature subjects, poetry, storytelling. So how is there any project or workshops for children and women also?
Certainly, yeah. So, I mean, I think there's several lines of work that I engage in. And one is broad, you know, peace education through spoken word poetry. And that's for everyone. I think that's valuable work. And I think it's really important to do that in gender inclusive environments. And as you said, that work can be done with adults. That work can be done with, you know, young adults. And that work can certainly be done with children as well. I think that's the beauty and the adaptability of poetry. And then in addition to that, I also do very specific work working with young men, having hard and critical conversations about masculinity. And so in those settings, sometimes it's important and valuable to get a gender-exclusive space where young men can talk with each other about what are the assets of their masculinity and what are the problems and what are the alternatives that they could envision. How can we change some of the cultural and structural parts of the world that we live in, which is not gender equal, and which has a lot of gender-based violence, and it's disproportionately committed by men. And so that means men should disproportionately play a part in changing that. And so those conversations, those programs are a little more tailored just to men. But ultimately, like anything, you can have a room full of men in an education project, but they're going to go back out into, you know, the quote-unquote real world, which is not like that. And so that work too has to at some point be gender inclusive. It has to engage the complexity of the world that we live in.
About the storytelling, so if we go back a little bit about storytellings, how could we let the people come and tell stories and to participate in storytellings, to just avoid the violence, as you said at the beginning of the speech.
Yeah, so I think it's about cultivating a community-based approach to arts education and to peace building. And so we need to figure out how do we cultivate more community-based opportunities for people to come together and to work on their art. And so unfortunately, a lot of times we think of art as a very solitary practice, you know, particularly poetry. Poetry is often taught as this is a refined practice that you develop by yourself, and then you write it down on a piece of paper, and then if you're very lucky, some person in a faraway place publishes it in a book and a couple people read it. That's the outcome. What we're trying to say is there's nothing wrong with that, but that's not necessarily a very impactful way to do peace building through the arts. Peace building through the arts has to be rooted in the cultivation of community spaces where people can come together. And that's particularly important and powerful for spoken word, because spoken word poetry in the tradition that I practice it is just as much about speaking as it is about listening. Spoken word poetry is about the exchange of stories. And so, yes, it's important that you take part in that exchange, that you share your thoughts, your feelings, your ideas, but it's equally, if not maybe more important, that you listen to others. And that's the power. And so the question then is how do we cultivate those spaces? And how do we, you know, as if we're in Switzerland right now, how do Swiss-based peace-building organizations support local actors to cultivate and to lead those spaces? And I think that's something that the peace-building field is attempting to do and is increasingly doing, but it's also an area that has a lot of room for growth.
What's the most advice you would like to advise young people, young men, young women also?
Ooh, that's a great question. I guess tapping back into the poem that I talked about at the beginning, that was a story about me. That was my life and my experience with silence and figuring out how poetry could help me empower myself, how poetry could help me find my voice. And so my word of advice to young people would be is that, you know, one, you are the world's leading expert on your story. You are the best person to tell that story. And poetry, I think, is a creative and powerful way to tell your story. There are lots of ways to do it, but poetry is an accessible, a creative, and a powerful way to do it. And you're the best person to do that. And if you don't, there are consequences. We live in a world where silence isn't necessarily an option in the tangible sense. If you don't tell your story, somebody else will. And intentionally or unintentionally, they're going to get some parts of it wrong. And that's because they're not the world's leading expert on your life story. You are. And so my advice to young people is often hoping that I can be a small part of a catalyst that encourages them to look within, to understand that they do have expertise in their story, and that it's not only worth sharing, but that it's powerful and that other people can learn through those exchanges of stories.
William, you did workshops in Palestine. How it looks like, how the people, the young men come, how they participate, and how could you make them react to the workshops?
Yeah, so there was a workshop that I did in Ramallah, Palestine a few years ago that was around using poetry as a means of nonviolent resistance. And so it was tapping into the Palestinian traditions of nonviolent resistance and the Palestinian traditions of political counter-narrative poetry from poets like Mahmoud Darwish all the way up to contemporary spoken word artists like Soher Hamad. And utilizing so a combination of traditional nonviolence training, but also infusing poetry as a powerful vehicle to explore how to create awareness, how to take that one step forward. And so throughout that multi-week program, what we did was we explored the traditional learning and the artistic learning. And what culminated from that program was what we call redefining poems. And so one really powerful way that arts can support peace-building practice is by helping young people understand an issue and then realize there are parts of this issue that are being really misunderstood by people within the conflict and often very much by people outside of the conflict. And so Palestine is a great example of a conflict that is often very misunderstood, particularly coming from, like, where I'm from, the United States. We often in the United States have a warped understanding of that issue. And so poetry allows us to reclaim and redefine. And so what we did is kind of an elicitive process where they look at the conflict based on our learning and our analysis, and then they pick a term that they want to reclaim and redefine. In this case, they pick the term Palestine itself. And so the word Palestine has so much weight to it, and it evokes a lot of images. But oftentimes those images are very stereotypical. They're very sensationalized. They're often very dehumanizing. And what poetry can do is counter all of those. And so we can go through the development of writing and metaphor workshops. We can reclaim what it means, the word Palestine, what it means to be Palestinian, and again, tapping into their lived experiences. So we're defining Palestine, we are redefining Palestine through the lived experiences of these young people. And then we are performing that. We are sharing that with the community. We are recording those videos with the hope that they can be a part of changing that narrative, which again comes back to the first point you made, which I really, really resonates with me, which is the power of language. And I think language is, you know, a site of resistance. It is a site of opportunity. It is not the solution to all of our problems, but it is a catalyst towards alternative ways forward. And I think using the arts as a way to reclaim and redefine key concepts within conflict can be a really powerful way to do that. And then, you know, broadly speaking, you know, men's violence prevention workshops follow a similar kind of model no matter where you do those in the world. It's the combination of traditional public health, violence prevention, education, which focuses on teaching young men about social norms and how that relates to rigid gender social norms and the problems that come from that. It's about teaching them about bystander intervention. When they see violence within themselves, when they see violence in their communities, what are safe and productive ways that they can interrupt that violence, that they can step forward verbally or through their actions? And then third, what are the alternative masculinities? You know, we're interrupting the violence, but what are we building? It's really important that we don't just deconstruct, but that we also simultaneously construct. And so that traditional approach is then supplemented. We use poems as inspiring learning text. We use poems as sensitizing experiences through the exchange of stories. And we use poems as examples of how what it looks like to step up. And so, unfortunately, a lot of young men are either underinformed on these issues, they're apathetic about them, or they're afraid. And that's a product of the social and cultural structural forces that they've grown up in. But what poetry can do is challenge, you know, their ignorance with critical consciousness, using poetry to inspire that learning. It can challenge their apathy with empathy, with emotional intelligence and development cultivated through the process of, and it can challenge their fear with practice and performing, using drama and poetry to help them cultivate those tangible skills. What does it look like to speak up? When you hear a sexist joke, when you see something problematic, what do you tangibly do? It's great to talk about it in our stories, but we always have to make sure that our stories are actually translating into our practices, into our actions.
William, there are a lot of poets and writers and filmmakers. They write from their personal experience. They were suffering, like Mahmoud Darwish. He is a poet, he's Palestinian, and he was writing poetry about the suffering of being someone living in a land which is occupied by someone else. A lot of many stories, they came from the suffering. What about you, William? You are a poet, you are a storytelling educator. Is there something you felt sadness and then the idea come to be a poet?
Yeah, I think it's a great observation. I think a lot of poets do start as poetry as a tool to process pain. And again, tying that back to the peace building work, it's a really valuable healing and processing tool. It can be a therapeutic tool for people. And yeah, I think most, if not all poets, we go through that journey of using poetry, you know, not only as, you know, a megaphone to speak to the world, but as a magnifying glass to look within. And so it's exploring who we are and the challenges that we've been through, the violence that has been inflicted upon us as people. So yes, I most certainly have also been through those loops and those processes. And that's why I believe so much in this work. It's certainly because, you know, I've been doing it for a decade and I've seen the results, and I continue to talk to the people who have been in these programs and see how it's changed their lives. But critically, I do this work because I've seen it within myself. I've seen the transformations within me, going from a person that hated poetry to a person who is a poet, for lack of a better word. And so, yes, I think that that internal processing is so valuable in such an underexplored area of the art. The product is important and powerful, but the process by which we get to the product, I would argue, is actually more important and more powerful.